Think Again with Borderlands Cooperative.
Join us for critical conversations about things that matter.
Every Friday at 10 a.m. on 3CR Community Radio, 855 AM on your dial.
And 3CR Digital, streaming live at 3cr.org.au.
So together, let's think again about important matters affecting us, like economics,
politics,
education,
health,
climate,
and what we can do about it all. Welcome to our 318th episode of Think Again, a program produced by Borderlands Cooperative, an organization working for social change since 1997. I'm Jacques Boulet.
And I'm Jennifer Burrell.
We're broadcasting live from the 3CR studio on the unceded land of the Wurundjeri people of the Kulin Nation. And today we're talking about the thieving incursions that artificial intelligence is making into our lives and the increasing rule and dominance of big tech. But first we'd like to say a few words about our dear friend Lou Zippin, who passed away recently.
Yes, Lou Zippin was a true scholar, with his work in education focused on approaches that address social inequities and social injustice, bringing to the teaching process what he called funds of knowledge, meaning the funds of knowledge that students bring to their own learning from their real life in their own communities. Lou talked about this in a Think Again program with his co-traveller and partner, Murray Brennan, on 20th of October 2023, if people are interested in going back to that. But on a personal level, Lou was a deeply thoughtful and ethical man, gentle and aware and curious about people and the world around him, a beautiful friend who I'm still getting to know. So many people are missing him, and we'll definitely have a tribute program on Think Again dedicated to him, probably in 2026.
And he was on the board of Borderlands for several years and was involved in a variety of little events which we organised. He also looked back on an activist story in his own life, starting in the United States, of probably altogether 40 to 50 years. And he was, I would say, a typical Freirean in his approach to education, learning and teaching. And we really do miss him.
So we'll have more to say in the future in a tribute program about Lou to really try to do him some justice. So on to our program for today. As Jacques said before, this week we return to the travesties of artificial intelligence in our lives, not least the future travesties of AI sure to happen if we don't firmly shut the gate on the ongoing thievery from human creators for machine-generated profit.
Indeed, the stealth or theft we are talking about is the machine-generated profit by artificial intelligence to fill the coffers of tech mega billionaires.
Yeah, so firstly, to give some rare credit, unfortunately it's rare credit to the Albanese federal government, it recently ruled out granting copyright exemptions for training artificial intelligence on the creative content produced by real humans. Of course, that doesn't mean it's not happening, but it's not, hasn't been made legal.
That's right.
So those exemptions would have allowed tech companies to legally take the creative work of real people for nothing to train its AI. Some cheek, that's what I say, especially as we know that writers and artists don't belong to the most highly paid groups in our society anyway and are remunerated way below their contributions. Mm-hmm. So we give one little brownie point to the Albanese government for that.
A deserved and really also much needed brownie point, I think.
Yeah. So there was a great article on this topic in the last Saturday paper. The Saturday paper, number 574, titled The Humans Who Fought AI. In this article, Leo Faber, an arts, film and doco producer, argues for a certification system that would let people know if a piece of artistic creativity, such as like a song or image or film, is generated by AI or by a real human. That would be good to know.
Mm-hmm.
The article is interesting because it highlights the importance and agency of the human world in actually producing something creative. Human context and human meaning are key to artistic expression, along with personal and collective processes and journeys in the making of the art. For the audience, it's the human backstory and context of what's being created.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So the point isn't just some efficiently generated work of art at the endpoint, such as coughed out by AI. Human creating in itself is important. And remember, creating, that's a verb, not a thing.
That's right. And to use a bit of a forgotten notion, it should be about the alienated object or the commodity at the end of a conveyor belt type process.
Harking back to Marxist theory there, Jacques.
Mm, that's
so,
right.
So it shouldn't be something disconnected from human involvement or skilled labour.
Mm, yeah. That's right.
Which is alienated.
Totally. That basically represents itself in reality all the time when it is created, rather than being conserved like in a cannery.
Mm. And to quote Leo Faber, describing the uniqueness of human creativity, I've spent 25 years immersed in creative culture, in edit suites, dusty outback locations, theatre basements, virtual landscapes, and broadcast boardrooms. I've seen ideas born out of chaos, nurtured by uncertainty, sharpened by failure, and turned into meaning. And Leo Faber goes on to talk about the importance of human creativity has for the human audience. So to quote him again, in all of this, we have always cared about who made the culture in front of us, why they made it, and what truth they sought in the act of creation. That reverence for the maker, the messy, complex human origin of creative work, is precisely what is under threat. AI-generated content floods our timelines, fills our ears, and seeps quietly into the cultural bloodstream. Unquote. Which is a pretty good creative use of words by Faber, I'd say.
Yeah, in this vein, he reflects on the importance of conversations. The conversations we have with each other through our art as humans. So it's not just about human creators being ripped off as individual or collective actors. What about all of us as creative audiences experiencing art by entering the listening, viewing, sensing space with the creators of that art?
That's right. Having a kind of back and forth dialogue with the real world where the art is created.
And quite explicitly, given our relational understanding of the world, we reject the transactional reduction or that exchange. Because really, if you think about it, it makes it a commodity, as I said before, rather than it being part of an ongoing live dialogue.
Mm. Well, Faber says the problem is that we as creators and audiences are being written out of the conversation while we're flooded with all the AI-generated content.
Mm-hmm.
As he puts it, we are edged aside by something impressive, efficient, and indifferent to meaning.
Efficient and indifferent to meaning, exactly. Mm. That is where the topic of artificial intelligence connects with our ongoing critique of managerialism, which we made in one of our very first programs in late June 2019, in an episode titled Managerialism, an Infectious and Toxic Ideology. Managerialism forms the toxic background machinery regulating our organizations, our interactions, in short, much of our lives. The top-down command and control approach being the ideal partner of neoliberalism, now freely hoovering up our creations and modifying them according to their ideological and practical intentions. That means the ideological and practical intentions of the organizations who rule our lives.
Including government departments and local governments.
Totally.
Yeah.
Yep.
So we're talking about really managerialism's factory production line with its inputs and outputs and KPIs and breaking everything down into little objects rather than the relational processes that we all work within.
Exactly. And the high premium put up on efficiency and customized or consumerist adaptation and followership, and the low premium put on the perceived messiness of human life with all its complexity, relationships, meaning and unpredictability.
Yeah, which managerialism frameworks and plans definitely don't want.
That's right.
Which is how they siphon out anything meaningful.
That's right.
Or relational.
And create false certainty.
Yeah, false certainty. Thank you, Jacques. And of course, the purpose of all of this minimalist efficiency of managerialism is mostly private profit, or in terms of government and the not-for-profit sector, they mimic. They mimic it.
That's right.
With the lion's share of, with the profit makers, the lion's share of profit going to smaller and smaller and wealthier group of people,
that's
or a
right.
smaller elite. So business commentators refer to the magnificent seven tech companies: Apple, Alphabet, which owns Google, Amazon, Meta, which owns Facebook, Microsoft, Nvidia, and Tesla. So four of these companies are spending hundreds of billions on AI over the next year, along with OpenAI and Nvidia, as told by business commentator Stephen Bartholomew's in The Age on the 6th of November, which is worth a read, even though the central point of the article is not the same as what we're making. In the face of the coming tsunami of AI, we'd have to agree with Leo Faber that we definitely need to defend and preserve human authorship. And to quote him again, AI, as deployed today, is not neutral. It is shaped by commercial imperatives and a logic of optimization. What it optimizes for, speed, cost, virality, is not what we as humans value most. Context, experience, risk, accountability, unquote.
Which then brings us to the grand folly of our time, how we reduce all aspects of our life and society to economics. The recent federal economic reform roundtable treated AI mainly as an efficiency tool for business productivity and for the fantasy of economic growth.
Yeah.
Yet artistic creativity is central to who we are as humans, how we relate to each other and make sense and give meaning to our lives.
Yeah, how we generate collective expression of events and who we are, how we got here and where we're headed.
Faber says that the deeper question relating to AI is not about tools, but about meeting. No, sorry, about meaning. Goodness me.
You're talking to a vegetarian.
That's right. But about meaning.
Meaning.
And I quote him, "Creativity is how a culture tells the truth about itself. Every song, painting or film carries traces of the maker's world. The land they live on, the language they dream in, the failures that shape them, when the lineage disappears into machine-trained mimicry, something sacred dissolves." End of quote.
Something sacred dissolves. And now that's got me thinking about Aboriginal art and how we'd feel about AI-generated Aboriginal art or supposed Aboriginal style art being sold as Aboriginal.
Which brings us back to Faber's point that we should be able to know if creative products are generated by AI or developed by real humans. Overall, let's continue to fight on a range of fronts the horror marriage between big corporation dominance and AI artificial intelligence intrusions into all aspects of our lives. And all too often behind our backs and aided and abetted by our governments, who understand their roles as fully supporting this capitalist process of extortion.
Except for the recent decision by
Albanese,
that's which right. we started the program with. But when you say that, Jacques, I'm sort of visualising an evil triangle with the three points being turbocharged capitalism, which is a twinned with neoliberalism.
Mm-hmm.
Two, AI concentrating power in a few big tech figures and companies. And three, managerialism, which we've just been talking about. Mm-hmm. With all three points working together to dominate and disempower real humans and real human social life. And if we don't put up a fight, we're looking at a real dystopian sci-fi future where we're serfs and consumers, really, no longer in direct cultural and expressive communication. And with the likes of Elon Musk and similar others in that club as our overlords. And it's not too unrealistic either at this point.
But it is a scary vision indeed. So let's sink that in for a while, listening to Abracadabra.
Abracadabra.
Which is filed under Indigenous New Sources or New Voices.
In our files, without the artist, which we'll correct later, maybe on our program page.
I heat up, I can't cool down. The situation goes round and round. Silk and satin, leather and lay. Black Benny with an angel face. Abra, abra, cadabra. I wanna reach out and grab ya. Abra, abra, cadabra. I wanna reach out and grab ya. Every time
listening to Think Again on 3CR Community Radio on 855 AM on your dial and streaming live at 3cr.org.au. Before the break, we talked about the impact of artificial intelligence on our lives and especially on those who create the content hoovered up by AI.
Yeah, and we quote a lot from an article by Leo Faber in the Saturday Paper.
Right.
In a book, Faking It by Toby Walsh.
Who I interviewed last year.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. He builds on the point that should be obvious, that artificial intelligence is not human intelligence. Actually, it's not intelligence, he really makes the point.
That's right.
They're fundamentally different things. But the point of AI is to mimic human intelligence. And this mimicry is happening everywhere, as we know.
Yes, and there is so much fakery and fake news on the net and generated by AI that it is increasingly difficult for people to have a real understanding of what's going on.
Yep.
Their understanding constantly and systematically being undermined. Artificial intelligence is making a really dubious contribution to our social ecological life. Yep. It is blurring the distinction between what is real and what is artificial. Or it just is an outright lie, threatening our sense of being human in an ecological, social, and techno-saturated world.
Yeah, in the full and rich context of our lives, lived as human beings.
That's right, which are messy and complex and all of that.
And multi-layered and multi-systems and interacting constantly in constant processes of life.
Another artist, Joseph Earp, he also says some important things about the fraught relationship of the artistic with artificial intelligence. Earp is a critic, painter and novelist, and his book Painting Portraits of Everyone I've Ever Dated, which is being published this year.
Which is a great title.
One of the many things about the so-called AI revolution that makes him want to run for the hills is the promise that AI will simplify things that should not be simple, and that he would never want to be simple. To quote him, What I am not happy to outsource is most of the things that AI is desperate for me to outsource. I do not want the computer to summarize texts sent by my friends into shorter sentences, as though the work of being updated on the lives of those I love is somehow strenuous or not what being alive is all about. I do not want Google's AI feature to summarize my search into a pithy. Depends on pronunciation, German, I suppose. Yeah. Often incorrect paragraph, rather than reading the investigative work of my fellow humans. I don't want AI to clean up the pictures that I take on my phone that are rich and strange in their messiness. I love it. End of quote.
Rich and strange in their messiness. He's describing my friends too. Mm-hmm. But well said. I don't even want AI to take my notes for a meeting, mm-hmm. which I've often been offered. Use AI to do your notes for a meeting.
Mm-hmm.
A meeting is a human interpretive interactional social exercise, organizational exercise, I guess. And that includes when I check my interpretive notes with others who are at the meeting to check whether we all agree that they capture the important points. That's part of the human process.
Exactly. But resistance to artificial intelligence is starting to rise.
Thank goodness.
Dan Milmo, who is the global technology editor of The Guardian, reported in mid-March that, and I quote him, artificial intelligence systems such as ChatGPT are the subject of a running legal battle between AI companies and the creative industries because their underlying models are trained on reams of publicly available data, including copyright-protected material such as novels and journalism. Mm. The New York Times is suing OpenIA over alleged breach of copyright, while Ta-Nehisi Coates and comedian Sarah Silverman are among the US authors suing Meta on a similar basis, end of quote.
Yeah, all strings to them. And they're all saying, stop stealing my creative work. And if it's valuable, pay for it if I give permission for you to have it in the first place.
Exactly. For the rest of the program, we move beyond AI and focus a little bit on big tech in general and its increasing rule over our lives. First, let's have a look at the assortment of tech overlords. Who are the main users and appliers of AI? Based on last year's available data...
It's the main exploiters.
That's right. The world's richest person, Musk, owns X, previously Twitter, and he just controls $433 billion. Mm. The second richest person in the world, Bezos, owns Twitch and the Washington Post, and he owns... possesses $239 billion. Number three, Zuckerberg, owns Facebook, Instagram, and WhatsApp. And he's also in control of a sweet $211 billion. Number four, Ellison, collects all of our data for the CIA, $204 billion.
Mm-hmm.
Number five, owns Le Parisien and Les Echos. And he's the French Arnault family, $181 billion.
Gosh.
And number six, Pichai owns Google and YouTube, approaching $200 billion. Altogether about $1 trillion and some $100 billion.
And that's their own, listed as their wealth.
Exactly. And that's become probably more by a factor of 20%.
Mm.
A new book by Cory Doctorow deals with the AI issue and the so-called social media in a rather creative way. His book is titled Enchitification, Why Everything Suddenly Got Worse and What to Do About It.
Mm.
It was discussed in last week's Saturday Age, which noted that the doctorate coined term, the Doctorow, I'm not sure
it
how.
It ends in W, yeah.
Yeah, how that his coined term, enchitification, was adopted by the Macquarie Dictionary as the 2024 word of the year. And it, and I quote, it describes in material terms how the internet, once a utopian vision promising direct business-to-customer transactions, human-to-human connections, and maybe even worldwide democracy and peace, degraded into its opposite.
Yeah, in a process, as you say, quoting him, of enchitification.
That's right.
That's a really useful new word.
Yeah, and checking out the Macquarie Dictionary for their definition of enchitification, it describes how lax antitrust applications of commercial law, which would encourage competition, for example, as our Assistant Finance Minister Lee keeps reminding us. The lax application of these antitrust and commercial laws have allowed big tech to grow and insert itself everywhere as a rent-seeking intermediary.
So rent-seeking intermediary. So rent-seeking referring to increasing your wealth by manipulating economic conditions or public policy without actually creating
That's
any new wealth.
Financial transfer stuff.
Yeah. Yep. So Joseph Stiglitz, the famous economist, I think he referred to that as lazy money, just using your wealth to generate more wealth for yourself, but not making any contributions to society. Rather, rent seeking has a range of negative effects on society and. Which is too much to list now, but Wikipedia actually describes pretty well the idea of rent-seeking.
Yes, it does, yes. And talking about big tech's rent-seeking, Dr. Roff suggests that we live in the Enchitocene. Remember the Anthropocene? Enchitocene. And our resistance or radical activism against such intrusions would be to operate beyond the reaches of Amazon, Uber and Netflix. Mm-hmm. And he posits that we know in our guts that all the apps we are dedicated to sit on platforms that are probably leading us to cheaper things, but that they also find new ways to rip us off. Mm-hmm. And importantly, sell our data and that they multiply therewith exponentially their technocracies control over our lives.
Yeah, so a boycott, or at least a conscientious minimization of the use of platforms, apps, and especially AI, would be good. It's hard to avoid, but we work to minimize. Mm.
That's why Dr. Roff sees hacking and other illegal forms as important resistance. And I quote him quickly, jailbreaking and hacking are central to resisting global enchitification. Yet, in much of the world, it's illegal, leading to prison sentences and immense fines, also in Australia. But he suggests that Australia could become a reverse engineering haven of both high-tech, IT and AI-dependent items, like cars, household items, which could incubate a tech sector in Australia and, for example, make all repairs of such items cheaper. So probably reverse engineering of all of these IT and
can you explain that? I don't quite get it.
Well, it's that
reverse engineering normally means, but what's he suggesting?
It would mean that all the algorithms which they apply then get reverse engineered so that we get access directly to the mechanics itself.
Oh.
Rather than it being mediated by electronics where we have no control over. And so I can imagine.
But power through hacking.
But it is legal in a way because reverse engineering is a legal kind of a thing to do.
Okay, anyway, something to think about.
Something to think about.
The Common Social Change Library is an online collection of educational resources for those involved in community campaigns and social and labour movements. It collects, curates, and distributes key lessons and resources from progressive movements from around Australia and across the globe.
Thanks to our listeners for tuning in to Think Again on 3CR Community Radio today. If you want to send us any comments about today's program, email borders@borderlands.org.au.
Our past programs are available by podcast on different platforms and via the 3CR website at 3cr.org.au. And meanwhile, please enjoy Milky Mana by Stingray.
You've been listening to a 3CR podcast produced in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. For more information, go to allthews.3cr.org.au.